Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I was going to say it's great to be here, except I'm trying to think of another way to say that because I always say the same thing, but it's exciting. It's fun.
We love it.
It's good to be in the present.
Yep.
It's nice. For me, it's great to be called to be in the present.
Yes.
Which is what I get from this
show. Yeah. It's a great argument for doing things like this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's why in our practice, people, you know, always want to talk about teacher-student stuff. And what I say to people always is, I'm not interested in students. I want teachers. And it's not that, you know, I'm looking for teachers for myself, although I always am. But I want people to practice to be able to facilitate the others in this practice. So my teacher would say about the gift of this practice, it's a debt that can only be repaid with the same coin.
Wow.
So you haven't you haven't really gotten it until you give it away. And in that process of attempting to make this available for others, we are required to be centered, to be in the present. Mm-hmm. I was kidding people about that at the retreat a couple of days ago, that, you know, when you sit on that cushion up in front of the room, or you sit here in front of this microphone, you're just not interested in letting your mind wander off or, you know, going up there to engage with karmic conditioning.
Yes.
It's just the stakes are too high.
Yes.
So the more we're here, the more we're called to be in the present like that, and the more we realize that we can show up, the more we want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorite experiences of that, I can't remember if I've ever told you this, but I was working at a project, part of it was facilitating this
uh-huh.
practice. And there,
yes.
I was one of the facilitators, and there were other folks. And one of the women who facilitated was just an outrageously gifted facilitator.
Uh-huh.
And then she would go out into her daily life and just be a wreck, a mess.
Uh-huh.
And one day she finished a group that even she could see was brilliant. She walked out the door and she watched the stuff start coming in, the conditioned mind start taking mm-hmm. over. She felt herself moving from that centered place that she had been in facilitating the group into who she was in her daily life.
Uh-huh.
And she said, she just stopped and said, now, wait a minute. If I can be that centered for a group of people, I can be that centered for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was just, you know, it was life changing.
Yes.
So that is the joy and the beauty of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So it is great to be here. It is a pleasure.
Yes.
You know, those aren't just phrases that we use because you got to say something at the beginning, you got to say something at the end. It's really true. It's expressing our experience.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Today's show is pre-recorded, so don't call us today. If you have a question, you can send us an email. Our email address is openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all of these wonderful shows are available at Sherry's website at sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And coming up after today's show at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca. She always has some wonderful new world music. And then at 9 p.m., the Bard of Euphony. Sherry, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, when we looked at it ahead of time, we had many, many wonderful
mm-hmm.
choices.
Yes.
And I think we both sort of perked up at the possibility of talking about politics.
Politics and spirituality.
Politics and spirituality. It's that time. 'Tis the season.
Yes. Yes. If you look at a newspaper.
Yeah. You just can't kind of be anywhere in this country without getting it that it's a big time in the world of politics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I suppose it always is. But mm-hmm. coming up to one of these big elections.
Presidential elections.
Yeah.
Kind of
heats everything up even mm-hmm. more. Mm-hmm. Stakes get really, really high. And
yes.
Gets exciting.
Yes.
So to look at politics and spirituality, how do you look at politics from conscious compassionate awareness. That seems mm-hmm. valuable.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I notice in myself, like I'm sort of walking on eggshells, like it's a dangerous place to be walking uh-huh. around in politics and spirituality. Because uh-huh. if it's just spirituality, then I can just focus on myself. And to some part of me, that feels safe. But politics, to some part of me, feels like telling other people how they should be uh-huh. or how they should act.
Yes. Yes. And that's it, isn't it? I want you on my team. And uh-huh. this is why you should choose my team. And this is what makes us the right team. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it seems to me we've kind of gotten away from that and gotten more into that's the wrong team. They're the wrong people. This is why you don't want to pick them. And really kind of very little about who we are and what we stand for. Mm-hmm. And I certainly wish that we had more of that again in politics. Uh-huh. But then I often feel that way about the world and the situation that the world is in. One of the things that we look at regularly with different kind of content is how opposition holds structures in place. Mm-hmm. So you believe that what should happen is here's a good one. You believe that all women should stay at home and raise the children, mm-hmm. do the cooking and the laundry. And I, being female, of course, think that's a really bad idea.
Uh-huh.
I think it's great if a woman wants to do that, but to be forced to do that, that might not be what I want to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I have two choices. I can either put all of my energy into opposing you, which really gives uh-huh. you a position.
Uh-huh.
It props you up in a really big way. Or I can just walk off and do what I want.
Uh-huh.
Now, choice one, with being in opposition to you, can make me feel really busy and possibly powerful and
righteous.
Righteous, yes. I can just have so much to say about what a devil you are and how wrong you are and how which is a different life experience from just going off and living my life.
Yes.
Which requires me to take responsibility, which means I have to face what goes on with me. That juice is not automatically generated by how wrong you are and how right I am.
Uh-huh.
So now I have to face possibly fears of inadequacy and insecurities and anxieties and all of those kinds of things. So it's easy for me to project that choice A would be more popular than choice B.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we look at it from kind of a scientific perspective, if we begin to get it that opposing a structure is what holds it in place, then we might be less willing to put our energy into how that's the wrong team and this is uh-huh. why you shouldn't be on their team.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we would get more to the place of this is our team. Who cares what they're doing, really? Uh-huh. This is what we want to do. Now, if you want to do what they want to do, that's fine. But this is what we can offer you.
Yes.
So it's kind of like a grocery store. Grocery stores, it would be pretty difficult for, people listen to this all over. So your two local grocery stores to get in some kind of a battle about what a wrong, bad grocery store that other one is. So what are you left with? Well, we've got to have better produce. We've got to have better service. We've got to have lower prices. We've got to have better hours. We've got to mm-hmm. – I mean, we have to offer you something if mm-hmm. we're going to get you to come to us instead of to the other guy. And I think introducing that into the world of politics would be truly grand.
Uh-huh.
And if as a group we don't have something better to offer than the other team has, well, then maybe people should go with the other team.
Yes, yes. And before we got on the air, you mentioned what a role projection plays in this.
Oh, absolutely. I truly, truly, truly wish. Now, for years, I've wanted people to understand self-hatred and for our society to get self-hatred as a real thing. that's happening in the world. It's kind of like other things that people have gotten, low self-esteem, or how widespread depression is, or lots of things that people didn't know existed, never talked about, didn't. And then as soon as you recognize it, you can see it everywhere and see how it's always been there. And I really want self-hatred to rise to that level in our culture, so that teachers know it about kids and parents know it about themselves and their children, and and we're really addressing it as a nation. And projection is the other one that I really want to have that happen with, because I think especially politicians would just be really a whole lot more careful what they're saying if they understood that they're only talking about themselves.
Whoever I'm talking about, whoever they're talking about, I'm always talking about myself.
That's right. Now, it could be true. So here you and I are both running for president, and I say he is a untrustworthy, irresponsible snake in the grass. Well, you might be. You might truly, legitimately be, by whatever standard we're going to use to measure that. But the thing we can know is I'm the one who thought it up. I'm the one who's talking about it. So it is certainly a very real experience for me. So when somebody calls somebody else a liar or a cheat or evil or those kinds of things that people like to throw around, we know one person in the discussion comes from that place, is having that experience.
The person who's speaking.
The person who's saying it. The person who's thinking it. Now, is it true for anybody else? Well, how are we ever going to know that? And the way it's set up, the way conditioned mind, of course, has it set up, is that I say you're a lying, irresponsible cad. And everybody looks at you. And then now you have to defend yourself. You have to try to convince everybody that it isn't true. But if we understood projection, nobody would be looking at you. You know, they'd all be looking at me going, wow.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you seem to have some problems and issues here. You know, it's funny because every five-year-old knows it takes one to know one. In my family, the expression was, it's a little coarse, but you smelled it first, it must be you. So, you know, somebody walks into a room and goes, whoa, what is that smell? Yes. And so it was a funny kind of recognition of projection. You know, well, it must be happening fairly close to where you are because nobody else noticed it. Yes. And so I do wish in the world of politics, especially those of us who are practicing awareness, that we would watch and listen very closely to who's saying what, and remember that, well, that is true for that person, but we actually don't know about anybody else. And also to listen for and what exactly are you offering? Rather than always falling into that, you know, even in advertising, it's like you can't buy toothpaste on the merits of that toothpaste. You have to find out what is wrong with all of the other toothpaste. And then buy there's an expression that covers that. But you just assume that the one that's being advertised must be better.
Yes.
Because they've just told you what's wrong with all of these others. And so there's an implication that that's not wrong with this one. And I think that's a very, very dangerous assumption. I don't think it means that at all.
Yes. Yes. And there we're back to the two opposing forces holding the structure in place.
Yes.
And as you were talking about that, it reminded me of the Assisi Peace Project and the vision for that, that it's for peace. And it's not against anything.
Yes. It takes no political position because it's for peace.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not even against war.
It's not even against war. That's right. Now, that doesn't mean it's for war.
Yes.
Which is something in the world of conditioning, in the world of duality, that is almost impossible to grasp.
Yes.
Well, if you're not against if you're not against war, then you're saying that you're for war. No. That's not what we're saying. Yes. What we're saying is we're not going to participate in holding any structures in place. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong so that you have to dig in your heels and fight that much harder to maintain your position. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to do that on your own.
Uh-huh.
And it's very difficult to maintain a lot of momentum against something if nobody is pushing back.
Yes.
So again, that image of just, you know, somebody's leaning into you, just turn around and walk away
mm-hmm.
and go about doing whatever it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we are interested in peace. So that's what we're going to focus on. That's what we're going to turn our energy toward.
Yes.
And if there isn't a viable alternative to what already exists, then we're going to be left with what already exists. But if there are enough people on this planet, and I think there are, who are interested in a different approach, then that different approach will become viable.
Mm-hmm.
So are we interested in peace? And let's gather together. And let's take out all of the, you know, in awareness practice, as you very well know, since you do the same practice, when we spend time together as a group, we don't socialize. We just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we get together and do what looks like socializing, we're not actually socializing. And what I mean by that is, what do you do for a living? Where do you work? Oh, and mm-hmm. are you married? And mm-hmm. and where do you live? And that sort of thing that I am convinced people only do to find things out about one another that they don't like,
uh-huh.
that they can be in opposition to, that they can disapprove of.
Wow.
So we don't go there. We don't do any of that personal stuff. We just get together and we practice together.
Yes.
And so there's nothing not to like. The thing that we have in common is that we all want to practice being aware. We would like to live from center. And in this case that we're discussing, we prioritize peace. We want peace. We want peace for ourselves internally, and we want peace in the world. So if we don't have any discussions about this or that, that we could be in opposition to.
How we're similar, how we're different.
That's right. And whether or not, well, but how do you feel about
such and such.
Such and such. And then, and I'm asking you, and because, I'm watching because I'm
right.
pretty sure you don't agree with me. And then, boom, we're in opposition. So let's just not have that discussion. The thing that's important is we're both for peace. And as we move more into that, as we have a greater experience of peace, and as we value that more within ourselves and our communities and extending out into the world, we're going to make a greater effort to maintain it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was talking with a woman, interesting woman, who's writing a book on conscious activism.
Uh-huh.
And looking at kind of at this same topic, and how as we move more into that, so, okay, you and I are both committed to peace. Now, somewhere down the road, we realize that we have differing views on clear-cutting forests. And you think it's a good idea and don't see it as harmful at all, and I don't think it's a good idea, and I see it as very harmful. So how are we going to solve that? How are we going to resolve that without going into opposition?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do we come to a solution that is compassionate for all?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes our priority, right. Not deciding who's right and who's wrong,
right.
And taking up positions and arguing and fighting and puffing up our chests and making ourselves feel really special and important.
Yeah. Engaging conditioned mind for that interaction.
Yeah.
And it seems like conditioned mind would see that there's only you're right or I'm right. It's a zero-sum game. Either you win or I win.
Exactly. That is conditioned mind in a nutshell,
mm-hmm.
because it is devoted to suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a model that guarantees suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So how, if we're not going to choose suffering, if we are going to choose peace, which in my world is absolutely synonymous with center and acceptance and, you know, it's all the same experience. So if we're going to choose that, How do we set up a situation where, in essence, everybody wins?
Yes. And I loved that idea of conscious activism, of looking to my heart for what's important. How do I manifest that in the world in a way that you're talking about that's not in opposition to something that's holding another structure in place, but is just for whatever my heart feels is
yes.
important.
Yeah. One of the examples that I used when talking with this woman was, you have a big multinational company and you're busy cutting down all the rainforests in the world. And for a long time, people tried to stop that. Well, for a long time, they didn't, sadly, until so much of the rainforest was gone. But then when people got wind of it, they began trying to stop it. And then some very, very clever people started doing something that actually worked, which is they started buying up the rainforest.
Uh-huh.
Because if somebody owns the rainforest who is not going to cut it down...
yes. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not... Again, it's a whole different direction from, that anger and righteousness and sort of thing. It's just, okay, well, then we need to come up with the money.
Uh-huh.
We need to take responsibility for this.
Yes.
I want the world to be this way. You want it to be that way. So it's kind of like a scavenger hunt. You know, if we're doing a scavenger hunt, we don't stay there and try to beat the opposition to death so that they can't go out and find their stuff and win the game. Okay, what we want to do is be faster and more efficient and that sort of thing. Now, for me, when we add awareness practice to that mix, we're also adding more fun.
Yes,
and I think that's the secret ingredient.
Yeah.
That, for instance, in politics, I think we actually have an example now. We probably get all sorts of emails about this, but I think the new governor of California is possibly coming very close to the model that I'm talking about, in the sense that the man can't seem to make enemies.
Uh-huh.
As much as people want to be his enemy, he keeps taking the roadblocks out of the way, and they wind up liking him.
Yes.
And it's obvious that he's having more fun than people who are taking this stuff so very, very seriously. And so it's just kind of a fun process to watch. You know, if you can get past the, yeah, but I'm a Democrat and he's a Republican, or, you know, what kind of Republican is he anyway? Is he, he just seems to be completely willing to offend everybody and to do what he thinks is the right thing to do and do it in such a kind of a fun, charming way that he's getting an amazing amount of support from places that no one thought it would come. So this is one of those where it'd be interesting to hear what other people have to say, as long as, you know, it doesn't turn into a political debate.
Yes.
But just looking at that from the point of view of an alternative to the way traditional politics happens. You know, I don't follow Arnie. In any kind of really close way. I mean, he may be out there saying hideous things about other people and that sort of thing. I've never heard him say anything about anybody else or what anybody else is doing in particular. It's just, he's on his little program. And if you want to go with him, that's great. If you don't, well, he's going to win you over sooner or later. So stay tuned.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And I think that I'm not saying this is the perfect person or the perfect politician or that sort of thing, but I think he's got a lot of things going for him that would benefit all of us personally and as a group in trying to find another model for how to be.
Uh-huh. Instead of us versus them, saying what's wrong with them.
Coming up with more and more money. To say what's wrong with them. More and more money to trash the other person. I just think with what's being spent in, say, a presidential campaign in this country, my goodness gracious, the number of people we could feed, the number of the amount of medical care that we could give, the housing, the that sort of thing. It's kind of shocking, really,
or yes.
We could even use a word like shameful, especially when so much of it is in pursuit of convincing convincing voters what's wrong with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Seems like a sad way to spend so much of our resources.
Yes, yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Today's show is a pre-recorded show. We're talking about politics and spirituality. If you have a question to ask, I encourage you to give us a call when Sherry's back with us live. You can also email us in the meantime at openair@kzsu.org. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca, and then the Bot of Euphony at 9 p.m. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Today is a pre-recorded show. We're talking about politics and spirituality. Sherry, about a week ago, a new movie opened.
We're having that kind of a day today, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I have so many thoughts and words that all trying to tumble out at the same time.
That's right. So you could start that again. I did.
Last week. A week ago from last Friday, a new movie opened called Fahrenheit 911, which was a documentary, I guess they're calling it, and was the number one movie for that weekend and possibly this past week. And I was curious to see it, and looking at politics and, you know, Michael Moore's perspective on it. And a part of me, it was interesting to watch my reaction to it, because a part of it, part of myself that came up is this sort of push-pull relationship in politics, this duality of one force against the other. And that makes me feel a little unsettled. And I was curious, you know, what you see in the movie or what you see in that relationship to politics and spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw it as well.
Uh-huh.
And I saw it primarily because of how much I enjoyed Bowling for Columbine.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of years ago, I was at Book Expo, which is the big international, really, conference mm-hmm. for people in the world of books, and went to a breakfast panel. Two of the people on the panel were Michael Moore and Madeleine Albright.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. In fact, at that breakfast, the title of his book, Dude, Where's My Country, was decided upon. There was another one that he was thinking about, and he did an audience
survey.
Yeah, survey, and picked that title.
Wow.
So I was curious to see it because, of course, I'd heard so much about it ahead of time. I was curious primarily because of the attempted censorship. I thought, my goodness, if people are this afraid of it, wow, that would be worth seeing.
Yes.
And I talked with some people. I actually saw it with my grandson and a couple of his friends. And as we all came out of the theater, you know, the first thing we talked about was crying
uh-huh.
in the movie, and that nobody really had gone there anticipating that.
Uh-huh.
That would be the reaction.
Uh-huh.
And but that was my strongest reaction. It just uh-huh. seemed so much of it just seemed so incredibly sad. Mm. And just sad.
Yeah.
And I've heard or read some interviews. Somebody saved me. In fact, Michael Moore was on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show or something like that.
I
don't know what the show is called, but he's a comedian. And
uh-huh.
and he was asking Michael Moore if this was a documentary and if uh-huh. this was fair. And Michael Moore said, no, no to both. It's my movie and it's my opinion.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You know, I made this movie. I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm impartial. I have really strong opinions. Uh-huh. And those came out. And he said, I attempted to intersperse them with sort of factual, a picture of the facts as I see them. And then you could tell where my opinions came in.
Yes.
And I just thought that was so decent.
Honest.
Really honest. Because in so much of what we see, you know, people are, it seems, trying to persuade us in a particular way and then presenting it as if it's fair or unbiased or impartial or that sort of thing, when it definitely isn't. So I just thought it was refreshing that he said, you know, this is how I think. This is what I see, and I can make the movie, and so that's what I'm going to put out there.
Yes.
So, so that was good, and I think it's fun and interesting to have this happening right now. I think part of this interview that I saw, John Stewart said, you know, sort of, aren't you just preaching to the choir? And he said, well, you know, if I can activate the choir. That'll be a lot. And when we came out of the movie, there were people with registration booths
voter
there.
Voter
registration booths. And they were talking to folks as they went by. And this one fellow walked past and they said, are you registered to vote? And he said, nah, my vote isn't going to make a difference. Huh. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of what this fellow's hoping to do with this movie is to get people thinking. And I have a sense that I don't know if this is true. This is just my projection that truly getting people to think, to look, to see, to examine is a more important aspect of it than actually changing people's minds.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that that's true, but I thought it was a great thing. I think it's fun and interesting to get that people talking about it, thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
and yeah.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of awareness practice in general. Is what we're interested in is looking.
That's right.
Not the particular content of what we see.
Exactly.
The process, the practice of.
Yeah. So looking. In that way, it's a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
All of politics is a workshop. You know, what do you believe? What do you think? What, you know, if this happens, what's that actually going to do for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this person is elected instead of that person, how is that actually going to affect you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you believe about that? What do you tell yourself about that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's fun. And this, when I was talking with the woman with the conscious activism book.
Yes.
She was saying that she was surprised to run into someone who has a background or a grounding in Eastern philosophy who is involved in participating in the world in the way that we are at the through Living Compassion, and which is kind of funny to me because you know, all of my life for the last 30 years or so, I have been working with people to awaken and end suffering. Now, if that isn't messing with the world, you know, if that isn't being an activist, I really don't know what is.
Yes.
You know, kind of at the deepest level.
Yes.
So if
that's pretty funny.
It kind of is. because if there weren't that perspective, then it would just be, you know, we would just sit up there on that land and meditate. But we don't do that. So it would be kind of hypocritical to say we're not actually participating or affecting the world. We certainly are.
Yes.
And not that people sitting there and just meditating, they're affecting the world too. It's just not as obvious. It's not as apparent to us. So somebody at one point, you know, we go to the Villa Angelica there at Carmel, and it's right next door to the Carmelite Monastery. And somebody was on their high horse about, you know, those women in there behind those walls and what do they do for – and I thought, a lot. I mean, think about it. They're in there devoting all of their consciousness and life force, I project. I mean, they've devoted their lives to praying for the world. Now, come on. That has to be helpful.
Yes.
I mean, it's not my choice. It's not what I want to do. But that's not to say it's not making a tremendous difference. It makes a tremendous difference for me. Yes. Whenever I'm there, I go to the chapel. You know, I sit in on Mass. I listen to them sing. They sing like angels. You know, this is a wonderful thing that they're doing. Yes. We don't have to decide how, you know, back to that right, wrong, good, bad. Is this, uh-huh. Is this a good thing? Is it, well, I don't know. You know, I benefit from it. Yes. Now, it could they be doing more if they were working with starving children somewhere? I don't know that.
Yes.
I don't know that. I think there's plenty of room for everybody to do what their heart calls them to do in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of room for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems in that sense that it's conditioned mind who wants to decide what's valuable, what's good, what's right,
yes.
what's helpful.
Yes.
Rather than actually doing anything.
Yes. Yes.
In the sense that in this moment, this is what seems to me as the most valuable and helpful thing to do for myself and for the world.
Yes.
And when I get to another moment, maybe it'll look different.
That's right. And I could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
I could be completely messed up on this. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But people will say to me, well, how does that square with Buddhism? I mean, why are – if there's nothing wrong – why are you going to Africa? Why? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, people are hungry there, and I have resources. I can contribute to feeding them. I don't have to think there's something wrong to want people who are hungry to eat.
Yes.
It's just, to me, that those don't have anything to do with one another.
Mm-hmm. So, this person is hungry? I have resources.
Food.
I want to feed them.
Yes. Simple as that.
Brings me great joy to feed them.
Brings me great joy. Yeah. In the same way that it brings me great joy when someone feeds me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I don't see, often I'll start a talk where I'll say something like, you know, I'm open to talking about anything that's spiritual, and since in my mm-hmm. world everything is spiritual, then we can talk about anything. And it seems to me that that's the case with politics or activism or any of those things. It doesn't matter what we're doing. It actually doesn't. It matters how we're doing it and where we're doing it from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's from center, then it's going to contribute to overall well-being.
Uh-huh.
If it's from conditioning, it's probably not. Even if it appears in the short term that it's doing something helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning, conditioned mind is heading towards suffering.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, if I feed a ton of people and all the time I'm doing it, I'm hating you. Because you have all this food and you won't give it to me, and mm-hmm. then I just question whether ultimately that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Certainly not helpful to me with a heart full of hatred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's fascinating to me when you were talking about how people see what you're doing with working with people in waking up and ending suffering. And see a distinction between that and doing the work in Africa or mm-hmm. in Assisi, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Just fascinating mm-hmm. to see that those are somehow get distinguished or put in separate
yes.
camps.
Yes, or what does a radio show have to do with that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you do that? But then I was kidding people the other day at the retreat when I said, you know, the number of times that people have just decided that I am a complete charlatan and fake and phony and fraud mm-hmm. because they saw me drinking a Diet Coke. It's like, well, you cannot be spiritual. Uh-huh. And one of the women in the retreat said, I had that experience. She said, I didn't have it with you, but I was working with this spiritual teacher, and she pulled out this Coke and started drinking it, and I just thought, well, that's it. You know, I have to get out of here. And she said that actually until we had the conversation, never occurred to her that could have been flawed thinking.
Wow. So there's a precept against Diet Cokes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly there's a prejudice that most of us carry that we don't even know we carry that says spiritual looks like this. Mm-hmm. Spiritual has to follow my ideas of what is spiritual and that I know what that is, which is the scariest thing in the world. You know, that I could look at you and based on how you're dressed or what you're eating or drinking or
saying
that I could know whether or not you're spiritual and how spiritual you are. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's alarming, truly, that we look to conditioned mind to give us that kind of information and then we believe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
it's alarming to me to think that, you know, seeing you drink a Diet Coke, it could discount 30 years of moment after moment, day after day, week after week commitment to assist people to wake up and end suffering.
Yes.
I mean, it touches me. it's big. You know?
It's big.
Yeah. I want to acknowledge, you know, your work and your contribution, and it's it's great.
Yeah. 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 So to look at that everywhere, you know, I mean, we look at the government. We look at our elected or not elected leaders, and it's so easy for us just to sit back and judge and be smug and superior and arrogant. And, you know, sometimes I think, ooh, not for any price would I want to put myself in that position.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure, the information that we don't have, the stuff that the level on which this is all operating. I mean, at this point, you know, people thought when the musket was invented that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to go out and shoot each other and it's the end of the world. But we really do have the ability now as human beings to put an end to this planet and to be in a position of making decisions and that sort of thing, knowing oneself to be a rather frail human. I don't envy it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that moving to that place, once again, of owning our projections, and then what do we really want for the world? What do I really want for the world?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, I want us all to wake up and end suffering. Mm-hmm. I want us to realize that this is, in fact, the Garden of Eden. We were never thrown out. It's right here, though, you know, we've polluted it to the point it's hard to recognize it as the Garden of Eden, but we're still right here, and that it is our potential to be here together and to enjoy it and to work for one another's benefit and well-being and all of those things. So why not put my energy into everyone on this planet recognizing that instead of wasting my time and energy going to conditioned mind to try to pick out who isn't. You know, who
deciding who is, who isn't.
Yeah, and who isn't worthy of that and who isn't working toward that and who the thing that I can know in that process is I'm not working toward it.
Projection being our friend.
Projection being our friend.
Yes.
Yeah. So if I'm busy pointing the finger and saying, well, they're not, and they're not, and they don't care, and he doesn't, and she doesn't, and what about, well, I know one person on the planet who is not focused on our greater benefit and well-being, and that would be me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't turn this life around, if I can't find within myself a willingness to go beyond my own conditioning to that greater good, then why do I think anybody else would want to do that?
I know for myself in those moments, you know, my energy, you know, is with conditioned mind. It's not toward solution.
Yes.
Helping.
Yes.
Creating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Because of exactly what you laid out, because it becomes so polarized.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the opposite. Only one can win. And so if I'm going to put any kind of support behind somebody that my conditioning has decided is the wrong person, then I'm helping them win.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, not putting my support behind everyone is helping us all to lose. My constant prayer is, people will ask me like about Robert Mugabe and Zimbabwe and that sort of thing. And my response always is, I'm praying for his awakening. I'm putting my energy into him waking up, seeing the light, and going in a new direction.
President Robert Mugabe, president of Zimbabwe.
And when he wakes up, I hope it's a gentle awakening.
Yes.
Because I don't want it to be followed by self-hatred.
Yes.
I just want him to look around and say, there are a lot of hungry people here. How are we going to feed them?
Yes. Wonderful. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Sherry, do you want to talk a little bit about the next couple of shows, what they're going to be like?
Yes. Do you have our schedule there?
Yes. Next week, July 27th. We hope to be talking with one of the monks from the monastery.
That's right. An in-depth interview with one of those folks who's just in the trenches.
Yes.
In the spiritual
trenches. What is it really like?
Trenches, yes. What is it really like? What's the real lowdown? Oh, it sounds like an expose.
We've gone undercover.
That's right.
At the monastery.
Investigative journalism.
Hidden camera.
See what they really do.
Yes.
Yep. So we're going to have a chance to find that out, because you will be talking to this monk, because I will be winging my way to Africa for our visit to Zambia. There will be two monks and two non-monks joining me there and connecting up with Brother John and opening the house in the first home for orphans that we are providing in Zambia.
I see.
And Alex, who will be going with us, will be taking some seeds, and we hope to get some gardening stuff going, and lots of stuff that we're excited about. So I'll be there for 2 weeks, and we're working very hard to make a connection so that we can actually do two of the shows from Africa while I'm there.
From Zambia. Wow. It'll be middle of the night at some point.
Yes, it will. Yes. It would be shades of Italy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'll take my alarm and get up, and we'll have a conversation. So I'm hoping that people will definitely call in for that one. Oh, I mean, I'm hoping that they'll call in and talk to our monk guest as well.
Yes.
But to call in to, when we're in Zambia, so that we can answer questions about what, for folks who haven't been there. What is it like? What does it look like? What is it? What's going on?
That's exciting. That's exciting. So that'll be August 3rd and August 10th.
And then when we come back, of course, we're going to have a lot of photos. A lot of photos of the house and the folks, the house parents, and that sort of thing, the children, and then a lot of other children, because this project, we're actually going to be able to connect sponsors with children, and so we're going to have a lot of photos of a lot of adorable children who are looking for kind folks who will pay their school fees and pay for their school uniforms and some food for them every day and that sort of thing.
So this is a house you're purchasing in Zambia for orphans?
That's correct. For eight, there will just be eight children in the house. But these other children live in the community, and they're all a part of this process that that Brother John is engaged in of making this whole community self-supporting and sustaining. And so that's what we're going to help with. And then, again, as we go along, our next goal will be to another house and another set of parents, adoptive parents, and then we'll put the kids in that house, and then we'll buy another house and like that until we get them all in houses and in school and eating good food and with some kind of plan for the future or hope for the future or possibility of a future.
Yes. And if people wanted to find out more information about this project, what you're doing, where would be the best place?
Well, they just get to that website, and then we have all kinds of arrows, I think, pointing people. This is a Living Compassion project, and it's the Africa Vulnerable Children
Project.
So track that one down and keep in touch with us.
Yes. So that website is livingcompassion.org.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier the weekend in October, and that Sunday is a fundraiser specifically for the Africa Project.
Mm-hmm.
So that we've been doing for 3 years now. And the proceeds are what enabled us to do the work that we are currently doing in Zimbabwe, which we continue to do even though we can't get back in the country, and now this work in Zambia. So.
Yes. I'm going to give a little recap of those dates and the events. That's Saturday, October 23rd, this coming October 23rd. It'll be a day of meditation and prayer for peace in the beautiful, large Herbst Pavilion
Fort Mason,
San Francisco, right on the water.
Yeah, and we didn't mention it. They'll see it on the website, I think, but it's going to be a huge day. There's a labyrinth there. We're going to do Sufi dancing and have Tibetan bowls and chanting and talks by various fascinating people on the subject of peace and time to just be together and pray and meditate and that sort of thing.
And good food.
And good food, yeah. Yes, and people really should let us know because we want to feed you. And if we know you're coming, then we can arrange to have the food there for you.
Yes.
Now, if people, you know, don't RSVP, we'll probably manage something, but it would sure help us out if people would let us know, especially people who are coming from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know because we want to take care of you.
Yes. And then that evening will be a silent auction and African drumming.
And dancing. And a couple of other very exciting
surprises
that are going to go along with that. That's a much smaller event. So if people want to attend that, I definitely want to let us know in advance.
Yes. And if you thought it was just Saturday, you're mistaken, because on Sunday we'll have the third annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk to support the African Vulnerable Children Project. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful day last year.
Oh.
Hot even.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Gorgeous. We've had two gorgeous days in San Francisco for that walk, so we'll see how we do this year.
Yes.
It's always a gorgeous day, though. It is so much fun. And I think there are pictures of that walk on the web, so people know what they're getting into.
Yes, fascinating. We're coming up to the end of our hour here, Sherry. Do you have some homework you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, yeah, I guess probably to me, the most fun thing to do, if there are people who do follow politics on any level, just catch yourself in some major projections. You know, when you see that political candidate who is not your choice, just do a little he's or she's so da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
And then just remember that that's a projection.
Uh-huh.
So.
And change the she to I,
and
repeat.
And repeat, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Today was a pre-recorded show. If you want to talk to Sherry live, give us a call when Sherry's back in town. If you want to reach us in the meantime, you can send us an email to openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the shows or at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.